And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, in addition to Jav and Maria, we are joined by Ari Cohn. Ari Cohn is the founder and president of the Post-Prison Education Program. Ari, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
So start out, for those that aren't familiar, tell us, what is the Post-Prison Education Program?
It's a nonprofit based in Seattle that operates statewide throughout Washington to get men and women coming out of prison into college or involved with post-secondary education, vo-tech, as well as degree-seeking.
All right. And how long have you been doing this?
Eight years.
What was your original motivation in creating your organization?
I met a man who was coming out of prison simultaneous to his brother going back in, and they had been recidivating all of their adult lives. He was suffering what's called co-occurring disorders or comorbidity. He was mentally ill and addicted, but he was highly intelligent. And I had spent a lot of time at the University of Washington the previous four years, and it just occurred to me that if anything could help that man put his life together, it would be getting him involved with post-secondary education. So I talked to three people at UW, and they were all excited about it. And so in August of 2005, four pretty naive people sat down and decided to start this nonprofit.
So, and talk about your success rate with recidivism versus the perceived recidivism rates that, for instance, our elected officials like to drag out.
Well, actually, the elected officials don't like to talk about recidivism because they are hopefully embarrassed by it. So it's right now the DOC, the Department of Corrections, published readmission rate as of December of last year was 46%, and I understand it's gone up from there. With us, over 8 years, we've had three people go back, and our success rate's about 98%. So it's that speaks for itself.
And so talk more about what an education gives the people you're working with, besides just, let's say, a piece of paper.
Well, the first thing it does is it provides hope and opportunity where people generally probably have none. And the second thing, it puts them in a clean and sober environment. A college campus is probably as close to an assured, positive, clean, sober environment as anybody can be, other than maybe KEXP at 7 in the morning on Saturday. I think the real thing, though, is hope. And they most people coming out of prison are beat down. They're despondent. A lot of times come from poverty. A lot of times have addiction in their lives. And this offers them a future that they can be excited about.
And so they're getting more than just the piece of paper to coming back into society, because, I mean, they're looking at a lot of things that they have to overcome. And one of those things, if they hope to get employment, is once you've been in prison, you're marked for life.
Well, what we've seen is that post-secondary education, two years or more moves you away from that. If you finish a four-year degree, you've literally put felony record issues behind you. I mean, my personal experience, I came out of federal prison in 2000 and spent 4 years at UW and graduated in 2004. And my first job was Washington State Senate. So I think almost invariably post-secondary education puts that behind you. I really do.
And having for places that have application forms that require you to check the box if you've, you know.
It just doesn't matter. I mean, my favorite story on that is a guy who came out of prison for almost 5 years ago, came out to Madison in work release here in Seattle. We put him at North Seattle Community College. He graduated with honors. His second year at North Seattle, where he was running pretty close to a 4.0, a lady at a really high-tech, one of these medical research firms that are in town, called me, and Chris had applied for a paid internship, and she said, please talk me into hiring this guy. I really want to hire him. And I spent 45 minutes on the phone talking her into hiring him, and she did. And they're friends to this day. And Chris, by the way, finished his electrical engineering degree at WSU and is married a veterinary in Virginia, and he's working on his master's degree and working for an amazing engineering firm. So
where do you get your funding?
The last couple of years, our major funders have been Google, and really more than Google Incorporated, which we worship, Google employees who we think of as Googlers, and I think they think of themselves as Googlers. They're amazing people, and ironically, Warren Buffett's sister, Doris Buffett, has a foundation, the Sunshine Lady Foundation. And they've been very good to us. We have there's smaller foundations. Real Networks Foundation has supported us for a number of years, and Lucky Seven Foundation supported us for the first 6 or 7 years, and then lots and lots of donors, lots and lots and lots of individual donors.
Similar to here.
Yeah. I think it's a get to know you process, we were actually looking at the balance sheet, or not the balance sheet, but an 8-year P&L the other day, and donations from individuals are way high, almost a million. So, yeah, over 8 years.
But originally, didn't you fund the project yourself?
My mother and I funded it for the first 4 years. Basically until we ran out of money, or at least got to the point where we were starting to worry about what if we keep living and need to keep roofs over our heads and we've given all our money away, and then what the heck do we do? So, but we funded it substantially for the first 4 years or so, and period. Yeah.
It's amazing work. Ari, talk about how one applies to your program, and how do you select people from those that apply?
On our website, postprisonedu.org, or you can just Google Post Prison Education Program. There's an admissions tab, and the applications are online. Most applications come in because we have a toll-free telephone number that people in prison throughout the state can call our office on, and we get about 900 calls a month from prisoners, and they can request an application, and we mail it to them in the prison. That's how most applicants apply. The admissions process changed dramatically about 9 months ago. We used to look at we have a scholarship committee. It's pretty much not active right now, and we used to evaluate who we were going to accept and spend money on and who we wouldn't. But we opened offices inside the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla and inside the Coyote Ridge Correction Center in Connell last year, and started doing office hours. And one day we walked out of the penitentiary in Walla Walla, and one of the staff members looked at me and kind of in surprise or whatever, it's like, Ari, we're helping everybody. And verbatim, that's what she said. And we realized, because of the office hours and people being able to kite a staff member and ask to see us one-on-one, that's what we're doing. And so now I think by the end of this year, we will have helped about 1,000 people, and we're not really using the application process or the scholarship committee process anymore. We're just asking people, what do you need? How can we help? And then we're trying to help as much as we can, period.
And then in once people are accepted to your program, what are the expectations?
You know, Jonathan Martin from the Seattle Times did probably the favorite article that's been done on the program, and it was within the last month, and there was a paragraph in there that talks about what we require and what and I won't say it as eloquently as he did, but we you have to be frugal. You have to have just we're looking for people to meet the legitimate frugal expenses and nothing more. So we're about really being cheap until you graduate. Shared housing, public transportation, no fancy clothes, no fancy anything, just a total focus on education. And we want people to focus on straightening out whatever issues landed them in prison. And in the absence of seeing that focus, we'll close a file. We want them to, you know, obviously be law-abiding and clean and sober and future envisioning. But it's really a really cheap, live frugal, meet only legitimate expenses, focus on the future, make great grades, reunite with your family, be good parents if you've got children in your life, and become what we call leaders for change, people that can step out in the community and change public opinion about who prisoners and former prisoners are.
So with your incredibly high success rate, what is the hurdles for getting, and maybe I'm wrong on this, for getting any state or federal support for this?
There's no question. The hurdle is what I call a legislative cowardice. A couple of years ago, when Eldon Bail was still Secretary of the Department of Corrections, he wrote an email to me, and said that it was fair for me to tell a foundation, that the reason the state of Washington doesn't fund post-secondary education for prisoners and former prisoners is legislative cowardice / political expediency. People are in Olympia are scared to death for being targeted, for being soft on crime. It's just that they protect their $40,000 a year legislative jobs as though they were being paid $500 million a year, and they'll work on politically safe issues, environment, education, blah, 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 but they will not put their political careers at risk for to fund post-secondary education for prisoners and former prisoners. And as a matter of fact, it's been outlawed. It was outlawed in 1995 with a House Bill 2010. Last year, we in the Department of Corrections, all the way up to Bernie Warner, the current secretary of the DOC, and many others, including Larry Sequist, who brought the bill, worked really hard to get it re-legalized, and we couldn't even get it out of the House of Representatives. It's actually illegal for the state to pay for post-secondary education for prisoners and former prisoners.
But again, looking at the data you present with your 98% success rate, and if it is crime that put these people into prison in the first place, aren't they dealing with crime by funding a program like yours?
They absolutely are, but they really don't care. I mean, it just the Seattle Channel did a TV report about the post-prison education that's on program that's on the homepage of our website, and somewhere and it won an Emmy, by the way, which was really cool. But there was somewhere in that report I quoted as saying they just don't care, and then somebody called me from Olympia and said that's not true, and I'm like, okay, maybe you're right, but the deal is they don't care enough to put their political careers at risk. They don't care enough about saving lives and reducing recidivism and safer communities to back post-secondary education, which is absolutely, unequivocally recognized as being the best way of reducing recidivism. It reduces recidivism about 50% or more. They just don't care enough to fund it.
So you mentioned multiple organizations that have stepped forward and funded your work. What about an entity like, let's say, the Gates Foundation?
The Gates Foundation, every time somebody mentions Gates Foundation to me, I think of a quote from John Bowlby, who was reporting to the World Health Organization, and he said, if a community values its children, it must cherish their parents. And that's something that the Northwest Programs part of the Gates Foundation just doesn't get. I mean, years and years ago, when Annie Juan Clark was a program manager at Gates in Northwest Programs, she called me, and she pretty much for 45 minutes, I think harangued me is a good word, but persisted in asking me to change the mission of the post-prison education program to, quote-unquote, target children. And I kept telling her, I said, look, when we accept a prisoner or a former prisoner 82% of the time, we're accepting a parent who has, on average, 1.91 kids. I said, so without targeting children, we're helping children. But she never said, and a year later, another program manager didn't say, we want you to turn your back on adult former prisoners. But they kept saying target children, change the mission to target children. And so it's like policy with Northwest Programs that they won't help former prisoners with post-secondary education. And it's a huge disappointment. The short version of that is, if you have somebody come out of prison and they've got kids and they're in a single house or an apartment, and so you've got a former prisoner who may be addicted, who may be mentally ill, who won't have the best education 9 times out of 10, and you've got children in that house, you better take care of the parent if you really care about the children. And if you don't take care of the parents, you're turning your back on the children. So it's you've actually struck on a pet peeve of mine. I mean, it's just enough said, maybe.
Talking with Ari Cohen, founder and executive director of the Post-Prison Education Program, how can people find out more about your organization?
Our office is 206-524-3333. And by the way, we're open on Saturdays from 10 to 2:30 at least. Sometimes we're there later than 2:30. The website is www.postprisonedu.org, or just Google Post Prison Education Program. My email is on our website. It's ari.cohn@postprisonedu.org. Or come by. We're in the Central Building, downtown, 810 3rd Avenue, Suite 180.
All right. Well, with that, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Mike, just one thing. If you'll get me a T-shirt that says Mind Over Matters, I'll walk down the hall and join the $500 club.
I'll get you one. I don't have one. I do have one on
me. I'm going down the hall right now.
Thank you, Ari.
Thank you.
Again, Ari Cohn with the Post-Prison Education Program, and you can find out more and support his work via their website, postprisonedu.org.